Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
I'm just realizing how unready I am to professionally speak words for 30 minutes. Hello there, and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. That's how I'm going to start doing the intros now, Kevin Zimmerman. My name is Kellen Olson. That's Kevin. I just said his name already. What's up, man?
Just find a way to crash and burn it like a new way each time you do this.
It is Friday afternoon, early afternoon, unfortunately. It's been a really long week here at the Arizona Sports offices, but for strange reasons, I would say. The Monty press conference on Tuesday was a nice little thing for us to kind of work through. There was the Jerry Colangelo, Robert Sarver thing, but overall it's been a really slow week, and those are probably... We talk about our workspace and how our brains tend to deteriorate over time from certain things.
It's worse when there's nothing to do.
But number one, by far, like, we could have a... Paul Goldschmidt gets traded on Monday. Igor Kokoskov gets fired on Tuesday. They fire Ryan McDonough on Wednesday. We could have, like, three of those days in a row, but a week like this where there's not a lot to do and we have to really turn it on to kind of get things churning and have an effective week as a sports website, they're tough. And we're both really struggling. I was sitting here telling you, like, we were just talking before the podcast like we always do. I started a story on two different occasions, just said the first sentence, and then I stopped talking. Without looking at my computer, by the way. It's not like I got distracted by something. I just started talking and stopped.
I gave you, like, a good 20 seconds to recover, but you didn't.
No. And then I realized it was silent, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, I was talking, and then I just stopped.
I just counted all of the snaps and added them together for the Arizona Cardinals in 2018, and then I re-added all of the snaps of players who left them.
So by now you're probably putting together that the reason we are doing this podcast and the reason that we wrote up a post on ArizonaSports.com is because it is late May and we are struggling to come up with things to discuss and dissect. But this is actually, I'm not lying when I say this and trying to, like, recover here. This is something to talk about, but it is just, as you can tell by the title of the episode, this is something that is inevitable and kind of unavoidable. We just talk about it all the time, but we haven't really had a concrete, here are the four wings on the roster, where do they stand discussion, and that is what we are going to try to have today in kind of a unique way.
I just had this thought that, like, wait, what if there was another wing we left out, and then I was just going to leave if we actually did. We didn't leave anyone out, right?
No, there's four of them. I'm going to pull up the roster now. You can't. This is the Friday thing again. You cannot say those things and make me think, like, is there just some other wing? We're not counting Devin Booker.
Oh, yeah, we're not.
Because he's a guard. Okay, there's no one. I mean, George King, but he did not play NBA basketball this season, so
we're fine. Okay.
So the four wings are obviously Mikal Bridges, Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, and Kelly Oubre Jr. Essentially what we did on the website, and I actually, if you're okay with this, I kind of don't want to do exactly what we did in the written form, because I think the art of conversation allows us to go further than what we could with the written word. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, we have to talk and finish our sentences now?
I was so nervous on the intro that I had to speak, like I said, and now...
Oh, they heard the intro that you did
do. Nervous. I know they did. That's why I did that. So what we did on the website, I'll run through quickly, is that we broke the wings down into five categories, and we scored each of the categories 1 to 10 on our own, and then we took the averages of those scores, added the five categories up, and came to a final score on the four guys. And these are categories that I came up with, and my thought on it was, we can't look at these guys as... We can look at them as overall basketball players, sure, but the most important thing for this position going forward is how they appeal to DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, and that just kind of means covering the spaces that they need to fill, which is kind of where you get to one of the categories, which is offensive creation, because, yes, Devin Booker is a very high usage player, and they're going to bring in a guard who is probably going to be involved a lot as well. But this is a space where you still need the Kelly Oubre's 17 points per game. This is where you still need Mikal Bridges to kind of be a creator every now and then. And that's that category, and that's where we go to switchability and defensive ability. Devin Booker does not project to be a good NBA defender. I think he's going to be average on a good team, and I think he can maybe even be better than that. We just have to see, because we haven't seen him on a good team yet, and we've seen him have stretches where he has been good defensively. But switchability is one where Booker does not do that on the perimeter at all. I think Ayton does, but you can't just expect your center to cover all your bases there unless he's a once-in-a-generation defensive big man, and we're not going to hold him to those standards at all. So having the ability to switch two to three, three positions, is a big deal. And then just simple stuff, control and contract value, that's just obviously just looking at their player value, and then spacing the floor is another really simple one where it's like, okay, how do you open it up for Ayton and Booker? Because that's maybe the most important thing out of these. I think the two most important ones for me are spacing the floor and defensive ability. Were there certain categories that stood out to you more?
Creation's important to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you need a third scorer if we're just looking at this next year's team. And they're all so different. It was just hard to kind of judge that one. That was like the hardest one to kind of conceptualize for me because, okay, scoring, but even if they're both 20-point scorers, they do it differently. Even if there's the same efficiency, they do it differently. So I spent the most time doing that because, like, switchability, that's easy. You know, spacing, I guess, has a little nuance to it, especially with TJ Warren. But, yeah, I think shot creation was the most interesting to me because, well, what was it, the exact wording?
Offensive creation.
Offensive creation. So that's their own offense and others, which obviously...
The way I described it, how much can the wing be trusted with the ball in their hands? Can they run pick and roll? Can they isolate and score? How about providing for others? Booker will need help every now and then, and that extra threat, that's got to be edited, and that extra threat will go leaps and bounds in assisting them.
I think the thing with that is, like, you want a variety of ways, and you can count, like, just spot shooting, you can count the pick and roll, but yeah, it's going to be Booker and Ayton, and that's why being Mikal Bridges is already important, even though he wasn't a huge scorer, because he's still a great floor spacer, and that's where those kind of Venn diagram into one another. Is that a verb? I don't know.
I like it. Switchability for me is just on the basis of we are going to have these four or five wings play, and they're just going to need to be able to switch defensively. Boston is the key example right now, obviously, but there are plenty of other teams across the league where you clearly benefit from being able to do that. You look at the playoffs right now and the teams that are in there, they have every team that made it to the conference finals has some high tier level of switchability. I think obviously in Toronto it's Siakam and Leonard, and Ibaka kind of fits in there too, and then Danny Green as well. If you look at Milwaukee, it's more of their guards. Bledsoe and Brogdon are just, they're very different as defenders, but they're so good that they can cover a whole lot in terms of, because Brogdon's got the muscle where he can actually be a kind of a pain for Kawhi every now and then, where Bledsoe's got more of the quickness with the strength to shut down a guard, and then you throw in George Hill and he's more of just straight length and tenacity. And that's where I look at switchability and say Bridges, Jackson, Oubre, all three of them offer something different, and then when you add them all together, that's where you get the high-end ceiling for this team defensively and why it's important for one of those guys to meet it. Because if TJ Warren is one of those three wings, it just lowers the ceiling of the entire group together if he's one of the guys that's playing 25 to 30 minutes and doing the switching.
I was looking at my own score just now because I don't know if I agree with what I wrote down, which is fine because it all ended up the same. But does it matter that Mikal plays more one than the other guys because they might need that more alongside Devin Booker? Like, that's also what was kind of challenging for me, because they don't have a point guard right now, but If they don't, then Mikal's a lot more important. And if they got a good defensive point guard, then maybe he's more on the level with the other guys. I don't know.
I gave Bridges a 9 for switchability, and you gave him a 7. And I gave him a 9 because I just don't think there are many wings that can guard point guards. And he's...
Yeah.
I gave him... Basically, he was around a 6 or a 7 for me, and I gave him bonus points for being able to defend point guards. And then just what the innate ability he showed against guys like Kevin Durant and others. Durant's the big example, of course, where it's just not... There's such a small list of guys that can actually affect the way those guys go about their business, and he's one of them, but he is going to have to add on a whole lot of muscle and weight to up that to even higher.
D- Did he or Josh defend Forswell last year? Because I don't think either did, really.
Josh really didn't defend anything well last year, but yeah. I think when he was playing at his best, it was the Marcus Smart. But he's way less strong than Marcus Smart, but he was still... My favorite possession he played last year was against Orlando when he guarded Aaron Gordon, and he just followed him everywhere, bullied. Gordon tried to get him on 14 feet out on the block, and Jackson just like kept shoving him back when Gordon has 20 pounds on him somehow, and then he locked him up and forced a shot clock violation. So that comes to mind. Oubre is the same thing, where I give him bonus points just for being a badass, because Jackson is the same way, where they just work so hard that they're going to be able to overcome mismatches in a certain way because of their motor. And I didn't really have much for defensive ability. I think that's one thing we should add is that we did factor in potential into this. I think you kind of have to. It's not fair to look at first-year Mikal Bridges against fifth-year TJ Warren and grade them equally on that curve. We had to look ahead a bit. But what was your overall conclusion on this group? Because there was a way where we did this and added up the scores, and it actually surprised us with who wound up where. But at least for me, it was right about what I expected in terms of who to score where.
Should I reveal that?
Yeah.
If you couldn't tell, Mikal Bridges was tops. He kind of ran away with it.
So we won at 1 to 10. Mikal Bridges, I have in front of me. He got 40 points from us on the averages combined, 40 out of 50. Then we had Oubre at a 30.5, which is quite a drop-off, but I think we can explain that. Josh Jackson, 27.5, so not that far away from Oubre. And I made the joke, but not really joke, when it was like post-All-Star break splits 15 games in, him and Oubre's stats were identical. And then TJ Warren at a 22.5, way down there.
They're all closer than that, obviously, than like that spread kind of shows. I think that shows we're down on TJ, and that's just because he's not doing the things on a bad team. And I wrote, like, I'm curious still if he could be a positive player and look a lot less bad on a good team. But I think the biggest takeaway for me was Josh. Like, we're still thinking he can be a good player, but when you see he's third on that list and just ahead of TJ Warren in terms of defensive abilities, that's bad. And that's because... You talked about your favorite possession of his, but he doesn't do that all the time. And if he is a complete negative, negative, negative on offense, and he's not doing that all the time, then you're really down on him. And that's kind of the scariest part for me is, like, I think we're trying to be optimistic as we can about Josh, but it still the scores bared out as they did.
I have... possessions drilled into my head for young prospects when either they are going to work out or they aren't going to work out. There's a drive that Bridges had against, I want to say, San Antonio. There was a Spurs game where he hit a three off the dribble, and then he had another drive and pull-up jumper, and those were two where it's like, if he turns into something offensively, I'm going to remember that. For Josh and his defense, they were playing against Orlando at home, I want to say. And Jonathan Simmons was going off, because this is the 19 win Suns we're talking about. Of course, Jonathan Simmons was going off. He had like 13 points in the third quarter or something, and there was 8 minutes left in the fourth. Josh comes back into the game with this mindset of, enough of this. It's Jonathan Simmons. I am going to lock him up. Simmons comes off two screens around the block and curls all the way back up to the top of the key to catch the ball. Josh goes to follow him around the screen, sprints with him around the screens, and keeps up with him. Simmons just jab steps. He doesn't even pump fake, and Jackson nearly goes into the first row with how fast he's going beyond him. It was that bad of a closeout, and then Simmons dribbles once, takes a 16-footer, and hits it. And that's just what I'm always going to remember about him, is it's never a lack of effort, never a lack of mindset. It's just control, and it's always going to be that for him on both ends of the floor. And I look at switchability and defense. You're kind of wincing a little bit. Do you think that I'm giving him too much credit for how good he is when he's good?
I'm just remembering Josh Jackson is the guy I always notice whenever they leave the very obvious guy as only a shooter wide the hell open. Like Kyle Korver comes to mind. He leaves him open.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I don't know what you're thinking, man. Like, those shooters for you should be the easiest to guard. Don't help. Stay on him. And that's like the most scary part for me about his future in general is like, what are you thinking? Yeah, that sticks with me more than the just effort and not doing well plays, honestly.
For Bridges, I think he is, I think him versus Oubre is interesting. That's like the biggest conclusion I came from this because I knew TJ Warren would do bad. I knew Josh would not do so well, but I think Bridges and Oubre are a lot closer on this than you might think. It's yeah. a 10-point difference in our dumb scoring system, but spacing the floor, I gave Bridges a 7.5, and that's just with the benefit of the doubt that I think his percentage is going to go way up in year two. There is a lot of historical precedent for guys who are really great shooters just not being that great as rookies.
And he has a rep already. Like, people know him.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think he's going to go up in year two. But this is the thing where if we do this like next year, I think Oubre could be higher than Bridges. Because if Bridges's percentages are still like 34 or 35, then you have to eventually just call it like it is after two seasons and then have to be proved otherwise and not just go off the potential he showed at Villanova.
I think, how old is Kelly? 23?
23. Bridges is 22. He's 1 year.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that also stood out where it's like he's only a year on him and he's already at 20-ish points. Well, getting up there with the Suns, at least he should be. I think he took steps forward last year just in the limited time he was with the Suns. So I think we keep forgetting like he's been in the league a while, but that was promising. And that's why just from defense to how he scores, even though he does have tunnel vision sometimes, like I think he fits really well. And yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, he hasn't reached his potential. Like, I think we know what TJ Warren is. Even if his negatives don't appear as blatantly on, like, if you threw him on a good team, but I think Kelly isn't at that spot in his career yet.
Yeah, I also chose to look at spacing the floor as you're doubled, you get the ball in the corner, how often are you recognizing when you need to shoot and when you need to pass and when you need to dribble, and Mikhail's really, really good at that decision already, and Kelly is just sort of a mixed bag still. I actually think that he was a lot smarter with the ball than I expected last season, but that's another one where I am making my own judgment call and saying I just need to see about 40 more games of it before I fully trust it, just based on what we saw in Washington and what we saw when he did go wrong. And then offensive creation is one where you could give Bridges like a 2 or a 3, honestly, if you weren't watching the Suns all year, but we were, and I just gave him a little bit more of a bump. I gave him, I think, a 6 there, just because I think that there's a lot of potential there. Oubre got the highest score for us in offensive creation. He got a 7 just because 17 points a game, doing it mostly off the dribble. TJ is a lot more of, you run stuff for him. He hits threes, especially last year. That's what he turned into. He was around the rim less. And you and I both actually made this same point. Like, we were both being clever, and both of us actually caught it for offensive creation. TJ is still a guy who scores in the mid-range a lot.
Yeah.
And when you go with spacing the floor, he is a he's a legitimately good shooter. You can't shoot 40-plus percent on 4 attempts a game over that long of a stretch, 45-50 games, and not hold that claim anymore. But at the end of the day, he's a mid-range guy, and spacing the floor, that's going to clog it up a little bit for Ayton and Booker when you do have to run that stuff for him to get the ball there. So we wound up with a 5 on him for spacing the floor, which is probably a bit harsh, but at the same time, Bridges isn't going to clog the mid-range at all. He's going to space it. And that's,
yeah,
that's
if you're playing TJ Warren, he's not going to space the floor, basically. Yeah. Like, that's, you're playing to his strengths, but yeah.
So to go back to the Bridges Oubre thing, I think spacing the floor, we gave Oubre a 5. He shot 32% from 3 last year for Phoenix.
Him and Bridges both seem like they're a lot better floor spaces than their percentages of threes showed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's one where we get another year of data and it kind of changes our ratings again, which is what I'm saying with those guys. The biggest difference for me was control and contract value. I gave Bridges a 9 because he is slated to make $4 million next year, $4 million the year after that, and a slightly over 5 in the final year before he hits restricted free agency. So you're getting a guy who premium skill set in the league right now is 3-and-D wing, can guard multiple positions, and then if he improves and does stuff as a scorer like I think he will, it's going to be an even better deal. And I think that's something where in the last 2 years of his deal, it's going to be one of the best contracts in the league in terms of bargains, because you can say Steph Curry making this, LeBron making that much or whatever is one of the best, but if you're looking at role players making way less, I think he's going to be one of those guys. And then Oubre on the other side, just depends on what he gets. And we just have to guess right now that it's going to be around 13, 14, 15, 16, somewhere in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's that one was hard with him just because we don't know what he'll get. And if, I mean, we didn't consider if he just leaves because then that would be a bad contract situation.
Yes.
But that's not the point of this exercise. Yeah. I mean, his, I'm okay with them overpaying him a little bit. I don't think, the more I think on it, I don't think they're going to have to overpay a lot if they do because... Mm-hmm. Just that market's going to dry up, and I think people will have spent too much money already by the time they get to him.
Warren's going to be making nearly three times as much as Mikal next year, and Oubre will be making over three times as much as Mikal. Just to give you an idea of how much money Mikal's not making.
What is Josh at? He's like making $7 million.
Josh is at seven. I gave him, I think I gave him a three or a four on that, and it's the bottom line is he was their worst player last year for the guys who played consistently, and he's going to make $7 million next year. That's just way too much money for.
Was he getting paid twice book? Possibly this past year. No, maybe not.
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
Sad face. Feels bad. So that's for Bridges and Oubre. I think that's the biggest difference, and that's probably not going to change. I think the biggest flaw in this whole scoring system is 40% of it is on defense, and it's really hard to judge guys' defense on a bad team, because TJ is a guy for me, actually, when the defense plays well, I think he actually can do his job within it. It's just when you ask him to do more is where he really, really struggles, and he is often the guy who has the breakdown. Josh, same thing. But Kelly and Mikal are just legitimately good NBA defenders already.
Yeah. Josh made $6 million this year. Devin was at 3.3 or 3. Yeah. So talk about value. Devin Booker.
Nah, they only won 19 games. Doesn't matter, dude. I don't know where else to really go here. I think looking ahead, I guess, Bridges is obviously, I think this backs up my whole thing that I wrote a couple months ago, or at least for me going through this exercise. I'm not saying it backs up like a grand point and I'm always right about everything. That he is the third guy out of these guys. The Ayton Booker third piece right now, currently as it stands, I think it is clearly him, even if Kelly is going to make more money and he is going to play more of a predominant role offensively. I still think Mikal is the third guy at the end of the day. It is fascinating, though. I think we need to remind ourselves a lot more that Oubre is only a year older.
And, I mean, if you project right now and they're getting a point guard and a power forward to start, Kelly's going to start over Mikal, I think.
Yes,
so
that's a money thing. That's going to happen.
That's we're kind of valuing Mikal's potential a lot more than these other guys. And like you said, that's interesting because Kelly's proven it. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, those two guys are pretty close. And that is why I think after we did all this, someone's going to be like, hey, you guys could have just said that and you like made the numbers to go that way that you already knew it was going to go. But I think it just validates that because that's why we did it. I was like wondering if we would come up with some other order.
I mean, we're not going to sit here and act like this isn't a dumb exercise. It's a pretty dumb exercise, but it's...
I mean, how do you think GMs rank and value players?
Yeah, exactly. We
probably in much more nuanced and better ways than us, but that's probably how it starts.
What does Kime have again? It's like the Cardinals factor or something.
Cardinals
what does he call
filter.
It? The Cardinals filter.
They rank them. They make a big board,
yeah.
And then you make a Cardinals filter, which gets rid of all the bad people and the injured people.
That's why they drafted Robert Camdichie, right?
I think that's why they made the Cardinal filter, honestly. Like, I'm pretty sure that's why, man.
They got away with it with Honey Badger. Honey Badger turned out to just be an awesome dude who made a couple of mistakes, and then Robert Camdichie... Not saying he's not an awesome dude, but the play on the field does not back that up, to say the least. Okay, let's stop talking about Cardinals, please. Good God.
Empire of the Cardinals podcast.
I think my question here to you is, did this make you feel better, worse, or the same about Jackson and Warren's the ability to trade those two guys? Did you think, oh, you know, there's... After looking at their overall skill set as a complementary wing, there's actually... No, me too.
That made me feel worse.
Me too. Yeah.
It's... TJ's is continuing for me in my head to be like, all right, someone really desperate. The closer you get to the end of his contract, which is not close at all right now, maybe you'll get to trade him. Josh, you would have to have someone who really is just going to take a flyer on him. Like, Suns taking a flyer on Michael Beasley and giving him a 3-year deal type situation. Which doesn't sound promising or likely.
Do you see any way right now where they trade Jackson and Warren and get value for it? And what I mean by that is Warren is not strictly a salary dump and a second round pick or a protected, highly protected first round pick. Jackson, they don't get some sort of tangible asset for it. Or do you think it's strictly going to be about money and space and just getting them out of here?
I think it'd be about money.
Yeah.
If you think you can sign someone or agree to, then yeah, they're just going to be a dump, I think. Or long term, just get off the money. I'm trying to think, like, I feel like we've talked about this multiple times where it's like one of them and Tyler Johnson or something thrown into a package just to make the money work. So yeah, they're not getting you anything to me.
The Warren is the one where if they deal him before Jackson is the guy who seems most likely to be dealt during the draft.
Yeah, because the salaries can...
I think the only way you trade TJ during the draft or before free agency is that you are getting back a player that you want to pay the money to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trading him to strictly get rid of salary, you have to do that during free agency when you know a guy is signing, just for the strict, because if you yeah. are trading him to get cap space
and you have no leverage in those situations,
yeah, so if you're trading him to get cap space and then you do nothing with that cap space, that's a disaster. I'm sorry, like, we sit here and talk about how much we think TJ Warren isn't a good fit for the Suns and everything. He's still a useful player for them. We're not acting like he's not a useful player for them in some stretches, and they'd be better off with him than without him. I'd rather have $11 million and nothing cap, or I'd rather have TJ Warren than the $11 million in cap space that you would create that winds up being nothing or winds up being used for two guys at $5 million or something. But if you can get a quality player with the cap space, you trade him, obviously. And that's why I've always said that Josh is the easier guy to trade, because on top of him having the potential and everything, it just makes a whole lot more sense money-wise for TJ to stay.
Yeah, that's true.
Because getting a guy of his quality in that money range to sign here is not going to be easy.
Yeah, and there's still like promise factor with Josh, where he's on a rookie deal. It's a kind of big rookie deal, but if someone has this space and they want to just try him out, yeah, I think he is more tradable.
Pat Bev on a 1-year deal with the TJ Warren money. Yes or no? Would you trade TJ Warren to get Pat Bev on just a 1-year deal?
Ooh, that's really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of somewhat realistic things here. Obviously, Pat Beverly is the dream for people in the point guard free agent market right now, but... you'd very likely be losing him.
Can't tell if that was sarcasm or not.
He actually is. For people who are being realistic.
Realistic, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Not like the dream. I feel like dreams are like...
The dream is Kyrie and Kemba Walker, yeah, but that's not happening. Sorry. You can play this back when I'm wrong. Please do that. I will be stoked.
We'll have ways to get over it, like covering a relevant... Oh.
Don't get ahead of yourself. Can't even. I'm not even ready to get there if they sign those people.
Okay.
Would you do that then?
Yeah, sure. I don't know, man.
This is Ryan McDonough's last 18 months. Yeah, sure.
I would want him on the like more than 1 year.
Yeah.
If it was 2 years.
Would you overpay him for 2 years then, I guess, is kind of the...
Yeah.
Would you give him 225 or something like that?
Yeah.
Me too.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of money.
For a dude who just and like had a good season, but he had a... crazy knee injury before that.
He got hurt a lot for a few years there.
Yeah.
But it's Pat Bev, and God bless him, he would be perfect.
I wouldn't want to mess with that team. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Give me 2 years.
I'm also kind of, this is very high on the spectrum of me just overreacting to things that probably no one else is thinking about, but the amount of times I see Josh Jackson on Devin Booker's Instagram story this summer just makes me worried about trading him in that that facility. I'm sorry, but when Devin Booker's posting on his Instagram story with Josh Jackson's dogs, and I'm just worried about pissing the man that matters off even more. Just cutting his best friends left, right, and center. When, again, his best friends aren't good at basketball, which, come on, Devin. why can't you be pals with, he is buds with Ayton and Oubre. I'm not saying he isn't, but, like, it seems like his best friends on the team, like, thus far, he was super tight with Ulis, obviously. Keese, he was really close with. And it seems like Josh is as close, from what I can interpret from my social, again, this is the spectrum I'm talking about. From what I can interpret on social media, it seems like him and Jackson are really tight.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
them and Kelly are tight.
They are, yeah.
Book and Kelly.
Yeah, I'm not downplaying that. They're buds.
Of other random things, who's driving Rashawn Holmes' car? I hope it wasn't Josh, but at least Josh didn't get arrested again.
Man, do we want to go down this road?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. No pun intended on the road either. In the whole
Rashawn Holmes got arrested in Miami for possession of marijuana.
I'm shrugging at weed, but I'm not shrugging at the weed in the car while you're driving. Just
they were pulled over because the driver was not wearing a seatbelt. If that tells you anything about that, just won't get political here. But yeah.
You know what? If it makes Rashawn cost like $2 million less a year, I'm kind of for it because I really want to see him on this basketball team again next year. I think one last point I'll get to here is to kind of branch off what I was talking about with Josh and Book. People have seen and quote tweeted videos of Booker talking about Bridges, but I think Booker can clearly see how much he gets the whole this Mikal dude is optimized for me. When I did the 18,000 word feature on him and talked to him about Mikal, he said, like, what's Mikal shooting this year? And I was like, 34-35%. It's like, right, like, he's gonna have to shoot like 40% multiple years for people to back off of him and for me to get space from him. He's getting it every now and then, but not consistently. They're still not treating Mikal like he's a sniper yet, and he said, like, that's going to come. Like, he's going to get there. And the same thing about Kelly and the way he talks about him, I think it's just having two core guys at the wing that Devin really seems to respond to in terms of the basketball fit is an important step that they've taken in the past year, because these two guys weren't here before, and Josh's style certainly doesn't fit with Book, and Josh, there's a Ewing theory thing there for sure, that Josh probably plays his best basketball when Devin's not playing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that there, and then obviously TJ's TJ. I don't think I need to go any further in that.
It's a good way
basketball.
To put it.
He's a good basketball player, but probably wouldn't be the funnest guy to play with.
It's a good summation, Kellen.
Thanks, man. Hey, we'll be back next week. We think pre-draft workouts are starting soon.
Who can say?
That's what we said last time, and we thought they were going to start at the end of this week, but no one tells the truth to me anymore. Everyone lies everywhere I go. It feels bad. Just can't trust anyone out here. I'm just super paranoid now.
I've been paranoid about the Miami-Dade Sheriff's Office ghosting me in my public records requests the last few weeks.
Shouts to my girl, Taylor Kinnerup. She said, it was either her or one of her friends basically said, like, we got to watch out for that road game in Miami now.
Yeah.
Next year, because, oh boy. Make sure the boys are in the hotel, please.
Miami is the new Scottsdale.
Y'all need to watch out. All right, we'll be back next week, people. See you then.